Hello and welcome to Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Vinsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. This episode is part of a new series exploring sustainability and fashion, created in partnership with Ralph Lauren. Throughout this series, we're inviting key leaders, academics, creatives, and entrepreneurs to share their stories and views on the challenges and opportunities of today's fashion industry. We'll look at how brands, influencers, and media can pull together to deliver much-needed positive change and explore the collaborations and innovations shaping a more sustainable future. This series is inspired by Design the Change, Ralph Lauren's global strategic roadmap to create timeless style, protect the environment, and champion better lives in line with the G7 Fashion Pact and the United Nations Global Compact. My guest today is sustainability and conservation expert, Dr. Helen Crowley. Helen has a PhD in zoology from the Australian National University and spent over a decade working with the Wildlife Conservation Society. She has a background in field-based conservation and development projects, as well as market-based conservation initiatives and designing corporate NGO partnerships. Since leaving the Wildlife Conservation Society, Helen has worked as a consultant to several international corporations where she was responsible for helping them implement sustainability strategies. Helen is currently developing new approaches for businesses to address climate and biodiversity challenges. She is a Lew Walton Fellow and a Senior Advisor for Resilient Supply Chains at Conservation International and an advisor to the World Economic Forum's New Nature Economy Initiative. Helen, so lovely to talk and welcome.
Thank you so much. What a privilege and a great opportunity to chat with you today. Thank you.
So through the decade that you spent with the Wildlife Conservation Society, you have a background in field-based conservation and development project, particularly in Africa and Madagascar. And I guess I want to ask how that prior experience informed your sustainability work in the luxury fashion sector?
Well, it's a little bit of a journey answer. All I ever wanted to do was be a wildlife biologist in Africa. I wanted to drive across the plains and study lions or something since when I was really young. So through a long sort of series of exploring where in the world I wanted to be when I finished my sort of academic training, I ended up in Madagascar. And during the time there, I sort of got more involved in conservation as opposed to sort of wildlife biology. I still love the whole animal side of things, but started realizing, of course, conservation is actually more about people and how you relate with people and how livelihoods interrelate with the environment, with the animals and so on. So I got really into sort of more conservation approaches while I was in Madagascar and then got the job with Wildlife Conservation Society, running program in Madagascar, but also Central Africa. So during that time, I started looking at all the work and the work we were doing and seeing that, you know, we're doing great stuff on the ground with people, with forests, with livelihoods, with animals, but it could all get swept away so easily by bigger forces, by companies deciding to change the way they were going to log the forest or by a new policy shift that said that, you know, we're not going to protect a particular area. And so while you need all that on the ground work, I started getting interested in what's driving these sort of forces that can overwhelm all of what we're trying to do on the ground. And I got particularly interested in working with organic cotton farmers in different parts of Africa and Madagascar, as organic cotton being a livelihood opportunity in and around areas of high biodiversity value, high conservation value, offering a way for farmers to have a livelihood and to sort of sell into international supply chains and also be incentivized and supported in protecting the environment by sort of this being a conservation cotton initiative, you know. And so I worked on that, and that got me really interested in supply chains. I thought, you know, if companies made the decision that oh, I want to buy my materials from smallholder farmers in Africa and help the farmers support them, steward the land and protect nature and wildlife. And that's important to me as a company. That would make a huge difference. And so I sort of got really interested in supply chains and how they could make such a difference on the ground, and started exploring that whole world of corporate sustainability. And this is all many years ago now, over a decade ago, and trying to understand what we could do to work with companies to do things differently.
It's always perfect when your ethics and your aesthetics combine so seamlessly.
Oh, that's a nice way of putting it. Yes, I like that. I'll use that. My ethics and my aesthetics combined. They did. Well, you know, life's like that, isn't it? It throws you these opportunities, and you if you go for it, you don't know where you'll end up. But the funny thing is that the work I do is not so dramatically different from what I did as 20 years as a conservation biologist, in the sense that I'm still trying to do the same thing, to sort of create positive outcomes for people and nature. I'm just doing it through the lens of supply chains and companies.
So Helen, I want to get a little bit sort of technical for a moment, because you're so unusually, it's one of the very, you know, few people in the world who actually are able to answer this question based on real experience. Let's take fashion and start at the top, because like every form of transition to a more sustainable net zero future, there are many, many, many things that can be done, and not all things have equal impact. And you can spend a lot of time frittering around at the bottom of outcomes, which are nice to achieve, but really don't move the needle. So I'd like to ask just the kind of big question, and then we can start digging in. Is okay. if you were to outline the first three or four areas where there is an urgent need for progress to be made in fashion, in order for us to make meaningful movement towards net zero or substantially reducing the planetary footprint of the industry, what would those four be, so that we know what we should be focusing on and what we should not be distracted
with? Let me just say from the outset that I view the world very much through a lens, obviously, of nature and environment. Okay, and sustainability has, as we know, a hugely important social context. And that any transition we do to a more sustainable has to be a just transition, and it has to include very deep and profound commitments to changing and helping support people across supply chains and in all parts of business and society. So I am not so much an expert in that. However, I do fundamentally believe that when you focus on nature and nature-based solutions, you actually do create the right environment, and I mean that literally and metaphorically, for livelihoods to flourish and to support more secure livelihoods and opportunities for people all around the world. When you think of how many people are out there growing things and mining things and so on, so I think there's a real link between livelihoods and nature and environment that we've got to be cognizant of and be explicit about. So I just wanted to say that up front, because I will spend a lot of time talking about nature and environment. And if we do, so now I'll segue to that. So the four things. As a scientist, let's look at this in a sort of scientific approach. We have the planetary boundaries. We have the brilliance of Dr. Johan Rockström and the Stockholm Resilience Center and many, many other scientists who are basically mapping what we can do to stay within our safe operating space for humanity. And we're beyond that in certain boundaries. So we have the science that's creating the framework in which we can define what sustainable looks like. So if you take that and you look at where those boundaries are already sort of moving into sort of unsafe areas and we've gone too far. It's around the biosphere. It's around nature. It's around the degradation and loss of our natural systems. And it's around nitrogen and phosphorus, which basically links back to agriculture. And in fact, agriculture is also a driver of nature loss. So if I took that science, okay, so what's the most important thing that we look at? Let's look at that, what the scientists are telling us. It's around nature loss. It's around the way we do agriculture. And of course, it's around climate. And those three are inextricably linked. So if you want to be a sustainable company and you want to set a real sort of a really effective approach to being sustainable, you have to look at those particular issues. You have to be audacious and visionary and say, we've got a decade ahead. The scientists have given us a decade or a little over, maybe a little less now, with climate and nature to really turn things around, to be transformative, to transition through to what we could call a nature positive approach and a climate neutral approach, whatever the words are. I wouldn't say a neutral approach necessarily in total. We want to move to more positive beyond just stopping the negative stuff that we do. So those set the framework. So you've got to look at your supply chain. You've got to look at your impacts, your real impacts. To your point of, it's easy to do fun projects around the edges that aren't too disruptive. It's easy to have a nice portfolio of different things that you do to contribute to society, to help nature. But what you really got to do as a company is look at your entire footprint and understand that and figure out where the priorities there in lie. And for fashion, when it comes to planetary boundaries, it is really around agriculture and forestry and mining-based resources, probably primarily agriculture. It's about understanding where our stuff comes from and making a difference about how that's produced.
I want to turn now to talk about the G7 Fashion Pact, which saw 32 leading fashion and textile brands, including Ralph Lauren, make commitments on climates and biodiversity and oceans. So can you give us your best crisp summary of what this the G7 Fashion Pact is?
The G7 Fashion Pact came together at sort of the request of President Macron to present at the G7 a coherent corporate approach, sector-wide approach to the great challenges, the environmental challenges we were facing. There are now more than 65 companies signed up, which represents about 35% of the sector by volume, and over 250 brands. And they have signed up to three pillars of action, as you said, around biodiversity, climate, and oceans. It is an unprecedented coming together of a sector that has huge opportunity and is very exciting. And there are three reasons why. One, it's the breadth of the commitment. It's covering climate, nature, and oceans, which is linked to both of those, dealing with our fundamental existential crises we're dealing with right now, dealing with the real issues that we need to face, and tough issues, right? Two, it's the breadth of the amount of companies that are involved, as I've said, across all different parts of the fashion sector, and a huge percentage of the fashion sector. And three, it is aiming to be really smart in how they articulate what they're doing. And it's early days, and obviously in the current situation that we're in, it's challenging to get it moving, but they're moving, particularly on the I've been working a lot with them on the biodiversity piece. And they're going to be able to articulate change over time, showing what they're actually doing to contribute to these large global challenges that we're facing at local level, but also at global level. So it is a very significant and exciting initiative that we should all get behind. And I think it's unique in those reasons I articulate. There have been other examples of corporate initiatives for sustainability that are impressive, from the investors, from the banks, from the companies where they've got together to commit to certain things, whether it's, you know, sustainable palm oil or zero deforestation. But this is a breadth to what these companies are doing that is really impressive. And it's and the breadth to the type of companies. Was that crisp enough?
That was amazing. Okay, so then the second question related to that is it draws on the science-based targets initiative. Can you tell us what that is and why it's important for there to be science-based targets within the G7 Fashion Pact?
Okay, so you may have heard about the Science Based Target Initiative, which was set up after Paris and the Climate Agreement, which was to help companies design their targets and their approaches to emissions reductions. Right, so that was the Science Based Target Initiative. That has been the inspiration for a new initiative called the Science Based Targets for Nature Initiative, which is basically taking that concept of helping companies, and in this case also cities, set the targets that make sense for them, but also to contribute back to us living within our boundaries, living within the planetary boundaries. What is it that you can do and you can't do, and what should you commit to for nature to live within our planetary boundaries? It's really getting going now. The Science Based Target for Nature Initiative is really getting going now. And it will create this framework for companies to use to make the decisions they need to make. It is really important when it comes to biodiversity, particularly, and nature or biodiversity. And I use those interchangeably, although they're slightly different. But let's assume, you know, living nature is biodiversity. So biodiversity is different to greenhouse gases and carbon in the sense that a ton of carbon is a ton of carbon no matter in the world, where you are in the world. Biodiversity is very specific to location, right? It's very different where you are in England, where I am in France, where I come from in Tasmania. The biodiversity, the species, the ecosystems, the interrelatedness of those are very different. So we have to think things through differently. Secondly, the drivers behind biodiversity loss are quite complex, a little more. We know that climate change is greenhouse gases, right? For biodiversity loss, it's agriculture, it's invasive species, it's overexploitation. There's a few things. So we have to be smart about understanding what we do to stop the loss of biodiversity and then to restore and protect it because of that. But the third thing about biodiversity that makes it different, and this is why the framework is so important also, is that biodiversity is more fun. Nature is wonderful. And when you give it space to be resilient and give it space to adapt and help it and nurture it, it gives a lot back. And there's a lot of power in that. It's not like a ton of CO2 isn't particularly sexy or fun, but biodiversity in nature is. So if we can not only stop the negative stuff we're doing, we can create very, very, very quickly positive outcomes. So, but to do that, especially because of those first two, the idea of location and what drives biodiversity loss, you need to have a smart science-based framework to make the right decisions because it's sort of complicated, but it's fun, but it's complicated. So the science-based target network for nature framework is going to create that for companies, and there'll be lots of guidance for sectors. And the Fashion Pact is getting engaged in that so that they can show the world this is how we are contributing to a global goal of, you know, no net loss of nature. This is how we're contributing to nature and climate, because there'll be links back to climate. This is what we're doing, and this is how we're measuring it. And that's why that framework is so exciting and important. We're developing it over the next 2 years, the Science-Based Target for Nature framework. It's a process, but the fashion pack companies are engaging in that to help that. And of course, there's a positive feedback. The more companies and cities that are engaged, the more we can make this work. And then the more the that others will come in and get engaged. So it's a really, I see it as a really exciting opportunity for us to really move the needle on nature and climate.
So Helen, I want to ask, what are the mechanisms in the G7 Fashion Pact that actually hold companies accountable and ensure that this isn't just a PR stunt?
Their mechanisms are getting set up now because the companies are very committed to being public about their progress. And I think they'll be held accountable by you and by the stakeholders that are following this. And they're really seriously looking at mechanisms. And I think the science-based target for nature framework does, implicit in that, is setting up the tracking. It's saying, what's my target? And then how am I moving towards that? So that's really going to help on the biodiversity pillar. And it'll be be able to show over time what's actually being achieved. So that is an important part of moving forward with the Fashion Pact, that there's very clear reporting mechanisms integrated into everything they do.
Great. And how are you seeing, brands such as Ralph Lauren and others that are taking action on the pledges? I mean, where are you seeing actual action occurring as a result?
It's great to see the enthusiasm and the engagement and the sort of collaboration that is happening around, particularly there's been a lot of ongoing work on the oceans and the climate and tapping into existing initiatives and reinforcing existing initiatives. We're in early days. Keep in mind it's really only been a few months. So I think that just the level of engagement and enthusiasm that I'm seeing, particularly also around biodiversity, people are really interested in what they can do with the nature crisis, what they can do with biodiversity, what are the risks, what are the opportunities. So I think companies like Ralph Lauren are really starting to look at their supply chains in a new lens to understand sort of the total impact of their supply chains and the impact, where their impacts and dependencies on nature are. That's a new way of thinking. And they're really starting to sort of think, oh, I'm going to look at my entire supply chain in a different way now and really understand it's not just about greenhouse gas emissions, although that's an important part of it. It's also about the solutions and where can I put that in place that will help climate and nature. So there's starting to be a new way of looking across their entire supply chains, which is really, really important because we're not going to get to sustainability if you don't have that sort of total, a sort of holistic approach to what your impact and risks are. And then you find your opportunities, of course. So I think there's a lot of great momentum building, and I'm excited to really support and help brands as they go on this journey. I mean, this is a new thing for fashion to be talking about nature in this way and biodiversity in this way. It's new, it's exciting, it's an opportunity.
So I wanted to ask you, we started by talking about the kind of four big things and that would move the needle in fashion. And we spoke about natural materials and we've spoken about circularity. What are the other areas?
Well, I guess the two that I just touched on during our discussion already, the other two I would add is this idea of really using a scientific approach. I'm not saying it made it too complicated, but look at what your real impact and dependencies are on climate and nature, oceans, water, however you look, but look across your entire, it has to be an entire supply chain approach, right? That's what there's, you can't be a sustainable company and not know about your supply chains. I know it's complicated, I know it's difficult, you just got to do it. You just got to know your supply chains, where your stuff's coming from, and that is fundamental to making the right decisions to drive the change that we need and the outcomes we need. And the second link to that is that supply chains are built for a purpose of efficiency, of margin optimization, and they do that relatively well. They're not built for sustainability and equity. So if you look at them in some ways, and you can say they're broken. So you've got to start building more collaborative network of supply chains. You've got to start figuring out what are the incentives, how the incentives need to be aligned. How do we work together as a sector? How do we work individually with our suppliers? There has got to be a lot more work on building more collaborative approaches across the supply chain, because none of these interventions of the nature and climate will work if we don't have that framework. So you've got natural materials, circularity or material mix. Be serious about your material mix and what can drive positive outcomes within that. Your circularity, of course, but keeping in mind that circularity is built on the input, which is regenerative materials in the first place. That's a really important part of it. Collaborative supply chains and knowing your supply chains.
So Helen, a final question, and you've given us such a wonderful survey of all the challenges involved in trying to insert sustainability into both the supply chains and in the production processes that are an integral part of the fashion industry. So in the context of all of that, what gives you hope for the future?
I have a lot of hope. I'm an optimist. I wouldn't get out of bed in the morning if I wasn't. And I've been a conservation biologist my entire life. And you have to be optimistic in that field. It's been especially the last 30 or 40 years, it's been tough. We haven't had a lot of successes on a global scale, you know, look at where we're at. But I think I'm optimistic because I actually have incredible faith in the resilience and the brilliance of nature. It inspires me. It adapts. It's the most incredible thing when we give it space, nature, and what it can do for us and what it can do for itself. And I think there's a lot in nature that we can that will help us in the future if we treat it right. And I'm very inspired by people daily. And Jane Goodall said many, many years ago when I heard her speak and they asked her the same question, well, how do you have hope? And she said, I'll let me paraphrase and but it's basically she has faith that I have faith in our ingenuity as a species. We can solve problems. We don't just have to create more problems. We're ingenious species. I have faith in our spirit. Like we really can do good. We really want to be connected to each other, to be connected to nature. It's part of who we are. And that there is a lot of good. Look at all the amazing things that are coming out of this crisis, the amazing stories. And so I think there's a fundamental need and want in us to do something for nature and do good. And our children, I don't want to leave them the mess, but I have a lot of faith in what they are going to be able to do with our help. We've got to hand them off something a little better than what we're doing at the moment. But I have huge faith in our children and my children and what they're going to do. And that's what keeps me going and keeps me happy and smiling and thinking we can have a thriving, prosperous world that is fairer for people. We've got to just do that, and we will.
That is a beautiful note upon which to end. So thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your work in a crucially important industry. And I look forward to continued conversations.
That would be great. Thank you so much. And take care, everybody. Nurture yourselves. And when you have a moment, nurture nature. It'll help you too.
Thank you for listening to Conduit Conversations. Feel free to subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. For more information on Ralph Lauren's Sustainability Charter or on Ralph Lauren's Design for Change program, visit ralphlauren.com or corporate.ralphlauren.com. And for more information on the Conduit and our community of changemakers, including our new digital membership, please visit theconduit.com.